Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Simply Amazing. Tim Ryder from The Apple. Back with us, frequent friend of the pod, our buddy Justin Toscano from The Record. What's happening, man?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's a new now on The Apple and the Simply Amazing pod for the a few times, but I think this is the first time I've been on the Apple version of, you know, the Simply Amazing pod. So it's exciting, man. Thanks for having me.
And no, please, our pleasure and my pleasure. And yeah, the Apple is taking off. Very excited with what's happening so far. The support's been overwhelming, really, just so cool.
Yeah, man, you deserve it. Like it's a cool new venture, and excited to talk some ball with you.
Yeah, it's an exciting time of year, man. We're recording Sunday afternoon, and you know, by Monday midday, we're gonna have spring training, Grapefruit League baseball kicking around. So Luis Rojas announced his pitchers for Monday. We already knew Jordan Yamamoto was getting the nod on. Well, I guess we found out he was getting the nod on Tuesday today. But this jockeying for position and you know, kind of internal competition. It's that good pressure that Luis Rojas was talking about earlier in the week. The guys that we're going to see on Monday, I mean, you know, you can go down the list here and, you know, there's certainly some viable options to help out the big league team, right?
Right. Yeah. I think so personally. I mean, the one I'm going to be watching, I know, you know, there's some Harold Gonzalez hype out there on the social media channels, but I'm really interested to see how Sean Reed Foley is personally. I mean, got, you know, him in the Mets trade. And, you know, he's a guy with some experience, a guy who could theoretically help them sooner. But also you have to think about a guy like, I mean, Thomas Zupacki. You know, Jeremy Hefner said today that he's going to be built up as a starter because he's got three pitches with, you know, swing and miss capability, which if you think about it is kind of the barometer, a good barometer for being a starter. And then you've got Stephen Tarpley. I mean, that's a guy who's got a little bit of big league experience that could theoretically be some good depth for them. But I think when you look down this roster, the thing that stands out to me is just the depth, really. Now you can look at the talent, and of course, you know, everybody's going to point to the talent. They turned over nearly half of the 40 man, but especially in these spring training games, you're going to see a lot of this good depth that I think is better depth, especially, you know, in the rotation, in the bullpen, than it really was a year ago.
Oh, definitely. And even like, you know, I'm a big Hildenberger fan. We like the side armors, love what we see there. And just to kind of talk about Tarpley for a second, you know, I like that the Mets are looking at metrics and saying, oh, this is something we can work with, because Tarpley's got, I believe it's a slider, just a phenomenal put away pitch. You know, they were looking for a left-hander at the time. And I guess when they signed him, it's like, oh, well, this is our left-hander. Nah, this is just another kind of, you know, weapon in the cachet. This is, I'm very encouraged by the Tarpley signing. And yeah, I mean, these guys kind of going out there and it's going to bring the best out of everybody, the whole internal competition. And, you know, even if you have guys who are on taxi squad type situations for the season, you know, that works too. Tarpley, get him some more, a little more experience, you know, even a guy like Sean Reed Foley, who, like you said, kind of a swing man, he can kind of do it all. I'm very interested to see Jacob Barnes. Louis spoke about him today a little bit, Jeremy Hefner spoke a little bit about him on Sunday regarding, his first impressions with him. Sam McWilliams talked. I mean, there's a lot of viable, you know, it's could be electric arms out there that could really prop this group up.
Yeah. And it almost makes you sad to say this, but it almost makes you forget that they traded Steven Matz, because they do have a lot of this depth. A lot of these guys, you know, you could see like a Sam McWilliams, you could see him make an impact, a Sean Reed Foley, even a Stephen Tarpley, even Jacob Barnes. I mean, these are guys, the important part is that these are guys, you know, excluding Sam McWilliams in this portion, but that have some experience to some degree. But it looks like New York is just trying to pull the best out of them, to tap into that potential. And with, you know, technology, metrics, analytics, things like that, a new focus on that, a beefed up R&D department, and then player development department. It seems like this is a real solid opportunity for the Mets to turn a corner with some of these guys, which is only going to help. Look, I mean, you can never have too much pitching, as the old adage goes. We hear it all the time, but it's really – it is true. It's going to be an interesting season in that regard, because for as much talent as the Mets have at the top of the staff, you know, with the rotation starting from Jacob deGrom on down, they've got a lot of interesting depth pieces that will be, you know, kind of intriguing to follow as the season goes on, even, you know, even through the minor league levels. I mean, there is a ton of competition there that, you know, that should only make them better, but it's like, I just feel like they've got more quality coverage on their pitching staff than they did a year ago. And it's really not close.
Oh, I think they've got more depth than, you know, most fans can recall seeing in a very long time. And it's depth that's actually going to show up and give you, give a fan a glimpse of hope when they really need it. Like, oh, hey, you know, we need Yamamoto to make a spot start. And, by the time he does make that spot start, Hefner and Ricardo and the rest of the pitching staff, Ricky Meinhold, what's up, Ricky? They're going to, like you were saying, they're going to find these little quirks or these little advantages that they can have or just their strengths. And they're going to build off that. Like Yamamoto, his metrics on his curve are just nasty. He's got the ability, at least in my amateur point of view, to really be a difference maker. And I think that him, Lucchese, all that depth is just it's going to suit this roster so well. And that's even on the other side of the chalk. But I had a question about Sam McWilliams. I'm not sure if anybody said anything. I know he's slotted in as a starter in the past. Do they have ideas for the bullpen for him?
Yes. Yeah. I think right now, especially because he's got a major league deal from them and he slots pretty well into the bullpen. He kind of talked about that role today. You know, I was trying to find the quote because I was looking for it earlier. But yeah, they've got bullpen plans for him. I mean, he could be a guy that could compete for a spot in that bullpen. He should. I mean, the way it plays, he's, you know, he's 6'7", 230. And like, I think, you know, you tweeted some rise on that fastball. And if his fastball's already touching 95 here in the first couple live BPs, he hopes that's going to tick up a bit. But I mean, that's something that really could play in the bullpen. I know that he said that, you know, moving to the bullpen in 2020, you know, for the alternate site was kind of, you know, beneficial just because mentally coming out of it, it helped him be, you know, just a little more aggressive in filling up the strike zone. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important for a guy like that, a guy who's been a career minor leaguer. I mean, if you start him there, or at least, you know, that's not to say you can't stretch him out in the future if need be, but with the way the organization is going and the pieces it currently has, I think, you know, the plan is for him to be a bullpen guy. I think he slots much better there in terms of maximizing his own opportunity to get to the big leagues.
Oh, definitely. And I think you can kind of look at, I mean, some of the guys we just mentioned, the Yamamotos, the Lucchese's, you know, guys who have traditionally been starters or even, you know, kind of flip-flopped, just to get those opportunities. I think that this coaching staff is going to try and shore up all those deficiencies and guys like these they're going to fill those gaps. You know, it might not be ideal, but I mean, look how good Lugo was. He was a starter and, you know, hey, you might be a better fit in the bullpen. And lo and behold, he's like one of the 10th most valuable relievers in baseball. So, you know, having that versatility, I think is just going to be such a strength. Jeremy Hefner spoke a little bit on Sunday. Great press conference. I know I'm very new to this whole Zoom press conference thing. This is only like my second week doing it, but the confidence in his leadership just from watching him over a screen, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I think there are guys who know the game and there are guys who have played the game and know the game. And I think Jeremy Hefner is the latter in that he's not just that former pitcher that gets his job just because he played. He's on the cutting edge of a lot of this, the technological advancements and really how to apply it. But Luis Rojas has talked, you know, time and time and time again about how Jeremy Hefner is just such a valuable resource for arm care too, given that he was a guy who, you know, went through two Tommy John surgeries. He knows, you know, the whole deal. He's fairly recently in the game. And I think these guys, the pitchers especially, love him. They relate to him. And a lot of things that we heard last year, you know, and still here, but heard last year when he got the job was about how with baseball going to, you know, you see all these numbers, but it's really about breaking them down and really about applying them so that pitchers believe in them, you know, and start to be able to find those improvements within them. And I think that's really where he excels, is that he knows how to apply those things. He knows how to send the guys on the right direction there, so they're not, their heads aren't just getting filled with a bunch of metrics, and, you know, they're not being reduced to a metric, but instead he's, you know, showing them that he's helping them, you know, extend their careers, maximize their potential.
Yeah. Almost like, you know, he has that relatability to a major league pitcher that, you know, like I guess he was talking about it today with Trevor May. He's like, you know, him and Trevor, they had a good relationship in Minnesota. They were apart for a year and now kind of reconnecting. It's, you know, kind of matching up notes, seeing where he's at now. And, you know, he's got the, I guess, the mental and baseball acuity to be able to convey the information to, I guess, on a very specific basis, on a pitcher to pitcher, you know, kind of, I guess, basis, for the lack of redundancy. But yeah, I just, you know, very impressive. I'm curious. I do love that he's, you know, I guess someone asked a question about Noah today. Is he going to face live batters? Nope. He's got many steps to go before doing that. Like, just no nonsense. Like you were saying, he's a guy who had Tommy John. I thought it was really cool. This is something that I didn't know. I'm sure we could have put two and two together, but when he was undergoing rehabbing from Tommy John, when he was a player, he was doing that with Matt Harvey, which, again, thinking back, yeah, that's probably on the right timeline, but I just never put two and two together. But like you were saying, having that experience and just that level of caution, it's going to be a plus. Again, we can go on for hours talking about positives, man. They really, it's been all positives. Francisco Lindor working with JD Davis this morning. Like, that's a huge positive. That's what you want to see.
Right. Yeah. It's almost tough because, like, in covering the team, you try to be objective, and there are things that, but in that, it seems to be all optimisms and positives. Now, are there things that could go awry? Yes. But I look at this roster, I look at this team as a whole, and even the coaching staff, and I don't really see this glaring deficiency like we have in the past with this team and this organization. And I mean, maybe it's the outfield defense. Like, if Nimmo doesn't improve, and because Dom has to play in left, assuming he doesn't improve, which, you know, he might improve, those guys, more experience usually leads, you know, to some level of improvement when they're that age. But I really don't see, maybe, you know, the bullpen if things don't go well, but it's like, I don't see this huge glaring deficiency that you look at it on day one of camp and you just say, man, this is going to be really tough. And I think Kevin Pillar said it best yesterday when he said, I think he was talking about the postseason, and it's like, everybody has these goals. Like, every team sets out on report date and says, let's win a World Series, you know, let's do X, Y, and Z. But he said, like, honestly, you look around the clubhouse on some teams you're on, and you look around and say, you know, this is going to be pretty tough to achieve this. Mm-hmm. And that's not the way it is here with this team. I mean, they've got talent from a lineup that should score a lot of runs, to a rotation that shouldn't allow a lot of runs. The bullpen looks good, you know, especially if you have guys like Edwin Diaz keeping the form he had in 2020, Jerry's Familia building off of, you know, that bounce back 2020, Dellin Betances coming back to form. There's a lot of positives with this team. I don't see a very glaring negative. Like I said, there are things that always go awry, unforeseen circumstances, injuries, things like that. But from, you know, a time of, if you're a Mets fan right now, I mean, I don't know when it was the last time it was this much optimism, just because the roster is complete. And not only is it complete and talented, but it's deep and they are trying to win. And they, you know, expanded their R&D department and analytics, and they restructured their player development department. They have new hires. Like, they are doing things in a new way now, and they have the talent, you know, to go with that. So no, I totally agree with you. You look at this team and it's tough to point out many concerns. Are there questions they still have to answer? Yes. But concerns look like, you know, you've got teams like the Pirates playing, you know, spring training in Florida. You look at the Mets versus a team like, they are just so much further ahead of a lot of these teams that in itself should be a positive for a lot of fans.
Oh, and I think it is. I mean, just even from a fan perspective, it's, you know, this place is over the moon. Like, worst case scenario, we're going to be in the hunt. We won't be running away with the division. I mean, that's what I'm hearing. And it's you know, it's exciting from the fans' perspective, but even just from an operations standpoint, like you were saying, there's not a lot of question marks. I think the bullpen is probably the biggest one. Just to kind of echo what you were saying. I mean,
right.
Yeah. I mean, if guys pitch up to their capability, the Betances and the Familias and the, you know, if these guys reach their potential, yeah, this is going to be a lights out bullpen. But, you know, that's definitely not set in stone at this point. So, you know, there's a give and take and there's a lot of progress, but I'm certainly enjoying the energy that's coming out of these so far. The players have been, you know, energetic. Albert Almora like didn't want to stop speaking to the press today. He's like, oh, it's over. Okay. I'll talk to you guys next time. Like, just, you don't, you know, again, it's an energy that, you know, just from a Mets fan's perspective, we don't see this. We don't see this at all. Like, I think Cookie Carrasco, I think people, I'm not sure that they fully grasp just how consistent and good he's going to be. Noah, I know Hefner said that, you know, we talked about it a little bit and, you know, he's taking his time, but I think most of us are expecting big things from him. Like, you know, if the pieces all fall into place, this is going to be a very exciting season.
Right. Yeah. And it's scary for opponents when you look at, you know, you've already got a top three of Jacob DeGrom, Carlos Carrasco and Marcus Stroman, or you could put however they order it.
Oh yeah. It doesn't even matter at this point.
Right. And then you're going to add Noah Syndergaard to the mix, especially, you know, with them being cautious with him, he's going to be back fully healthy. You're going to add him to the mix. And it's like, that's one heck of a top four. If Marcus Stroman is your number four or somebody like that's your number four, it's a very good rotation. But yeah, I think the obvious main concern is the bullpen, right? Because you could look at it on paper and you could project out like, okay, you know, maybe Diaz doesn't have as good of a year, but Tantas never returns to his Yankees form. Familia just, you know, in the last year of that deal, like just kind of goes downhill. So you could definitely, and even then they've got some depth there that could be used, but you could project it out to where that could be a weakness, but they've got talent there in that bullpen, which I think is these days in, you know, in baseball and modern day baseball, especially, is more than a lot of teams can say. Bullpens are just volatile. They're unpredictable. That's kind of the nature of what the game has become, for better or worse, whether that's a fair assessment or unfair assessment, but this team is strong where you want to be strong. I mean, I think I like the McCann signing personally. They're much stronger up the middle with him and Lindor. You know, I'm really not sold on getting rid of Brandon Nimmo or just labeling him this early. I mean, I think he can improve and he's much better than the fourth outfielder that some people, you know, make him out to be. But I don't see a major glaring hole. Like, yeah, they could have signed George Springer. Like they could have gotten Trevor Bauer, which, yeah, okay. What, like, you know, whatever, like whatever people feel about, they could have done these things, but the team on paper is the best it's been in years. And I think a lot of fans realize that and are grateful for that, because you're seeing the reaction come out. And it's good that they realize that, because it's like, one, life is way too short to nitpick a roster like this. Like, this is a very good roster.
Oh, for sure.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
All right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
The Nimmo is a fourth outfielder crowd certainly gets to me.
That one's tough to swallow. I mean, it's I can't imagine notching an OBP like that over my career and being called a fourth outfielder.
It blows my mind. But it's the excitement, that the talent. It's funny. It's almost like a perfect storm of the development of this core. They've all been getting better, and you know, they've had their hiccups, and you could pretty much say that about everyone up and down the roster who's part of this Mets team that's been here mostly, and except for Lindor and McCann, it's pretty much, you know, 1 through 7. So, they've had their ups and downs, but boy, Nimmo, Conforto, if Alonso is right back to his 2019 self, which if you look at him towards the end of last year, he was certainly getting there. Yeah. If Davis returns, I mean, this is, it's all kind of, striking while the iron is hot and, striking 7 or 8 different times. And it's impressive. I mean, we saw Lindor working out, the kids in camp, the young prospects, they've been working out with, their, I guess, veteran counterparts, Matthew Allen and Jacob DeGrom, yeah. Pete Carl Armstrong and Conforto. It's that sustainable success, and we're kind of watching it take place. And it's for a fan and for a lifetime fan, it's the coolest feeling in the world. And we haven't even started yet. It's awesome.
Right. Yeah. You talked about, I think you mentioned it, but just kind of you referred to that window. And that's always a thing, especially with baseball, with the way things are structured and the arbitration, then to free agency. It's always like that window, because so many organizations aren't willing to pay their best players. And so it's like you set out this window, like we saw it for the Cubs, like we saw it even for the Astros. Now it's like seems to be closing a little for them. It's closed for the Cubs. But it's like you look at that window and you say, especially if they lock up, Lindor and Conforto, or even just Lindor, this is going to be a very talented team, because not only do they have the advantage of veteran talent in Lindor, even though he's still young, but has experience, and a guy like Jacob DeGrom, Noah Syndergaard, Marcus Stroman, Carrasco, but they've got the young pieces too, and the controllable pieces, and Pete Alonso, Dom Smith, JD Davis, Jeff McNeil, and so they were really fortuitous on that point. It just goes to show, like, with a little bit of muscle on the trade market and in free agency, I mean, this was a roster that was ready to compete and that has now just absolutely taken the next step. And, we can go on all day about like whether arbitration is fair, like what the system should be. But for now, it's like they're getting some of their best players or their cheapest players. And yeah. So like they have found a way to, I think Sandy Alderson and Steve Cohen saw it, when Steve Cohen took over. It's like that roster was ready to contend with a couple more pieces. And now, they had the controllable pieces of their core. That was most of their position player core, was the younger guys. And now it's like they've added these pieces, and it's, their window, this is, like you mentioned, this is how you build a sustained winner. And I think that's what it's about. When you look at a team like the Dodgers or even the Yankees, like teams who are always there, it's like you need to have some sort of structure there, from R&D to player development to scouting. And it's just, to up to the major league team, up to being able to willing to win. And I think, if I were a fan, that would be the most, not only impressive, but the most encouraging thing about this all is that throughout it, they have had a willingness to win. They have not spent like drunken sailors, they missed out on top free agents, but they have tried to improve this roster, and God, in a winter when not a lot of teams did, I mean, that in itself should be commendable.
Yeah. And even like the whole missed out on big free agents, I'm not even a subscriber to that. I think, and I know that, yeah, they made a sizable offer to both Springer and Bauer, reportedly made the largest offer to Bauer, but, or however it worked out. But these are guys that, at least, in my outside looking in opinion, the Mets didn't need a Springer. Sure, him in center field for 2 years would have been nice, but what about those last 4 years when he might not be a center fielder anymore? And what about Bauer, who, you're paying him $40 and $45 million a year? What if he's a 3.75 ERA pitcher again? Like, it's not quite missing out. And I'm to be a fly on the wall during those 2 weeks respective 2 weeks of internal discussions. That would be an experience, because that had to be some some high drama discussions.
Right. Yeah. I think at the beginning of the offseason, it's funny because when you looked at it, I said on like a few podcasts that I thought Trevor Bauer was the most important for them, because if they could lock up a guy like that, you know, I get it. Like, he's a little overrated for like the money that he's getting. I mean, a lot overrated for the money. We can say that for days, but
you know what, to his credit, he caught lightning in a bottle this offseason.
Right. Exactly. And the situation worked out. So anyways, I thought he was the best fit for them. Cause I say, you know, what's the road to a title? And usually it's best pitching, best defense. And I was like, okay, if you can line up DeGrom, Bauer, and Stroman in a, you know, a 5-game series or whatever, you know, in the start of 7-game series, whatever you want to say, then they're going to have a chance to win. But once they acquired Lindor and Carrasco, I mean, for me, it flipped. You know, I thought Springer would have been good, but even then, I mean, I think Nimmo is very good. I mean, you've got to find a spot for Dom. I think it's just a lot of fans just see the talent factor. Like it's an overall rating and MLB The Show or something like that. And it's just like, it doesn't work like that. It's not that easy. And like, the thing I will agree with some fans on is that if they were making that kind of offer to Bauer, then they should have upped their Springer offer to try to outbid Toronto. Like, I think that's a fair point, but they're two different cases. And I don't think the Mets really truly needed either of them. Sure, one of them might have taken this roster even further over the top, but it's like, this is a very sizable step from 2019 that they're taking, 2020 that they're taking. God, it's almost like 2020 didn't exist, but this is a very sizable step that they took and the start of something that seems like it could be great.
I couldn't agree with you more. Just, you could feel it. And speaking of excitement and energy, we're going to cap it off. Mr. C, Mr. Cohen is in camp. Is that energy palpable or what?
Yeah, he came. He's been here. I think he plans to be there, you know, most weekends. And he, you know, he and his wife were there, and that, yeah, he's checking out the team, checking out, you know, how things are going, making sure, you know, it's still there, things like that. but no, he's been hanging out on the top deck with, you know, Sandy Alderson and a couple others. Yeah, he seems to be having a great time. I mean, it's, you know, you saw the pictures of, I'm sure everybody saw the pictures of him, you know, talking to Lindor, talking to Conforto, you know, talking to some of the other guys. It's, I think, you know, I'm not sure like what all these, you know, players throughout, you know, we've heard stories about the Wilpons and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, I'm sure you could say, you know, they talk to people too, but it does seem like Cohen has taken an interest and a passion and not only the organization itself, you know, and he's got to worry about the bottom line, but he's taken an interest in the people in it. And I think that's very encouraging.
Yeah. Oh, and just a complete 180. I mean, you know, we all have our Wilpon stories, and you can ask anyone in the fan base and they'll tell you, but you know, so I bumped into Jeff Wilpon at Fan Fest last year, and it was my first credentialed event, and I had my name tag on, and he looked down and he saw it and he gave me a little smile and just kind of walked away. And you know, we were very vocal. And again, we were just fans of the block. So, you know, we're going to be vocal, but, you know, to his, he could have threw me out on the spot. He didn't. So credit to him, but yeah, it's a completely different, energy, even from the outside, from the fan perspective, it's a whole new world. I hope, you know, I hope Disney doesn't hit me for the trademark there.
Yeah, no, it's good to be going in the right spot. Like I said, not only with the talent, but the infrastructure. And, you know, I know there's new jobs up for the R&D department now. And you know, that have been posted, and just everything that they've done, I think has been to try to be more sustainable. And I think that's the way you have to do it in a sport like baseball. Cause like basketball, look, you get LeBron James and Anthony Davis and you're in the finals pretty much every year, but it's like baseball. You need more of a consistent process, I think, that allows you to not only draft, but you know, to scout the major league level, trades, free agency. And I think a lot of that is, you know, through R&D, through player development. I think I really think they're on the right track. And to end, not by boring people with all this R&D and player development stuff, but the roster itself, man, like looks, yeah, this is a very good roster. I mean, I think the Dodgers, they're still ahead of the Padres and the Mets and anyone else in the NL, but it's not by much. Like the NL, I think a few teams in the NL have really tried to close that gap. And I think it's going to be a really, really, really fun year. Here's to hoping fans can be there.
Oh, my goodness. I was watching a little bit of the Yankees today on TV, and just hearing the fans was very, very cool. Been watching the Knicks all week, and that's been awesome with fans in the stands.
It just brings such a good element. And it's like, it feels like just so not real, I guess, or, you know, I don't even want to say surreal, because that's almost got a good connotation, but like in the worst way, it feels not real when the fans aren't there. And it's just like, it's like a high school baseball game.
Couldn't imagine. Just, you know, these professionals have to kind of switch gears like that into playing to an empty stadium or an empty arena. And this is athletes across the board. Just very strange.
Right. But, yeah. Hopefully by October, it's max capacity.
Oh, my goodness. Imagine. Oh, and imagine the Mets are there. My God, Justin Flushing is going to be in burning. It's just going to be, you know, people sell. Oh, my goodness.
It's going to be. I'm just thinking about it now. You know, when they get, you know, even some fans, I mean, those, it's going to be a lot of fun. Those August, September, you know, battles against the Braves and National. I mean, the division is stacking up to be very, even the Phillies. I mean, I thought they were on track to have just a disaster of an offseason, but I actually don't think they did that bad this offseason. And so it's a pretty stacked division, man. It's going to be a lot of fun to see these guys go at it.
I don't even think the Marlins are going to be pushovers. I really don't. I think that's a nice young team. I think Monty Harrison is going to be a player. He's a young rookie coming up for him this year. And such an important part of a successful season. It's kind of beating up our inferior competition, and you're playing a division or division members 20 times a year or almost. And you have no guys to really walk over in this division. It's going to be a dogfight. It really is.
Oh yeah. No, it's, I wouldn't be surprised if whoever comes out of the NL Central just gets absolutely demoralized. And, you know, in the first, you know, like first round on in October, just because the NL West is going to be very good too. And the NL East is going to be just a rock fight. Like you said, the Marlins, they play a brand of baseball that a lot of teams just are not equipped to play against, because they force you to be good fundamentally. They force you to make quick, smart decisions. Like, they're fast. They will bunt, you know, they will hit it on the ground. Like, yeah, they're very much kind of old school in that, and using their strengths and their athleticism. And like Luis Rojas has talked about it, you know, a ton over the last year, but it's going to be a lot of fun. There's a lot of talent in this NL East, from, you know, Lindor to Realmuto to Soto and on and on and on, Acuna, you know, and it's just, this is, I think, without a doubt, the best division in baseball. And that's just my opinion, but.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, and it's kind of tough to argue with that. It really is. And out of the Central, I do think the Cardinals have a very, very nice team. I think young guys like Harrison Bader, I think he's going to have a nice year. I think Tommy Edman's going to have a really nice year. I think Jack Flaherty is going to be up there in the Cy Young contention. That's a very tough team, but you know, that's why they play 162, right? We'll see how it shakes out.
It never happens with what's on paper. There's always different circumstances. You know, you hope everybody stays healthy, but that's just not the way it is over 162. So it's things are going to be changing, and it's going to be a wild ride.
I can't wait. Justin, I only asked you for 20 minutes. I think we got a solid 40 out of this. This has been awesome, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. It's always a blast. Always happy to do it. And glad you're doing well.
Thank you so much, man. Same to you. You know, everybody check out Justin's work in The Record. Over on Twitter, I have you right here. I wrote down the handle. Here it is, Justin C. Toscano. That's at Justin C. Toscano. What do you got cooking over there? You got anything going on as far as features, or just kind of rolling with the punches?
I've got a couple things planned, but yeah. So I'm doing something on the DeGrom Allen workouts at Stetson. I talked to somebody over at Stetson, so that'll be out in the next couple of days. And then I've got some other stuff. So yeah, stay tuned.
Awesome, man. Awesome. And you were speaking with Stroman's coaches at Duke.
Yeah.
That was a great story.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. That was one that came together just simply because I wanted to get a little something different than, because everybody gets the same quotes on the Zoom. And so I figured I would just try to get something. And he actually was, you know, he was very good. It just came together, yeah, pretty quickly. But it was interesting to hear about that, because I do think that there's a lot of people who are very turned off by the idea of like a Marcus Stroman type player in person. But hey, man, if he's authentic to himself, and I think, you know, that's who he actually is, according to his coach, I think it's just interesting to hear a different perspective on a guy like that from somebody who actually knows him and not people who are kind of criticizing from afar.
Yeah, really just a very cool. And, you know, I know he has his detractors, but, you know, that's just Marcus Stroman is just, you know, just follow him on Twitter. He's one of the more positive people you'll ever come across. And, you know, reading the article, you just kind of got like affirmation of that. It's like, all right, cool. Like, you know, it's legit. It was just very, very good story.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that.
All right. Well, Justin, good luck in camp. Great luck. Good luck this season. I'm sure we're going to have you back on, you know, throughout the year, but really looking forward to your coverage, man.
Heck yeah, man. Thank you so much. Looking forward to being on again. Take care.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
See you.